Dear comrades,
αγαπητοί σύντροφοι, αγαπητοί φίλοι,
and I am proud to welcome you, you, the representatives of a movement which has done more than any other throughout the last century to place the individual, the people at the heart of human progress. This is a movement that has put the demos in the word democracy, and demos in Greek means people. This is the movement that has struggled to give voice to the voiceless. This is the movement that has challenged the myth that the few have a right to control what the majority have, what the majority should think, or what each and every one of us should say. This is the movement that has challenged the myth that people cannot govern themselves because they do not have the knowledge to do so effectively. This is the movement that knows that oppression of one means oppression of all. This is the movement that has stood for social change. We have fought for the liberation of all human beings, liberation from inequality, from insecurity, from persecution, liberation from illiteracy, from extreme poverty, from fundamentalism. Liberation from torture, from terror, from war. These freedoms are our rights. Freedoms, rights that ensure the actualization of human potential. This is why we differ from our conservative adversaries. For us, social welfare is not a burden, but a necessary freedom for development. For us, human rights are not an obstacle, but a necessary freedom for security, to ensure security. For us, education is not limited to the few and supposedly brightest, most often richest. Education is a necessary freedom to bring out the sparkling talent within each and every one of us. For us, protecting the environment is no obstacle to economic growth. It is a new opportunity for a better quality of life, greater competitiveness, more sustainable economies. When we have matched successfully our values with the practice of democracy, we have seen progress. We have seen our peoples become the authors of their own history rather than the victims of others' decisions. We have seen one half of humanity, women, given their voice, colonies and subjected races liberated, the working man and woman finding security. But when we have failed, we have seen progress abdicate power to the few and wealth surrendered even to the fewer. Today, we cannot fail because today, friends, we are at a turning point. Today's struggle goes beyond the struggle for social change. It is a struggle, and we must dare to make the struggle for the survival of humanity. Let me be clear. We face apocalyptic changes in our own lives, but even more so in the lifetime of our children. Climate change that brings droughts, desertification, or floods. Unregulated competition in a world market that brings us skyrocketing food prices. Unchecked concentration of immense wealth, which in turn brings us inequality. Unbridled dispersion of new technologies that bring us more precise and destructive warfare. Unchecked powers of governments or corporations, which whittle down our freedoms and rights. If we do not find the will to overcome these phenomena, they will lead us into an era of unprecedented violence. The violence of seeing your water resources lost, the violence of being uprooted from your village to become part of a mass refugee movement in search of a distant future, a future where you may face again xenophobia, exploitation, and racism. The violence of waking up abruptly one day in poverty as you cannot find the means to buy food for your family. The violence of losing your job and not having much hope to find a new one. The violence of greater and greater inequality. The violence of conflict over energy resources. If we fail to act, global warming could shrink the global economy by 20%, leaving hundreds of millions of people at risk for drought, floods, food shortages, creating up to 200 million climate refugees. These figures are daunting, but the cost of inaction is even more frightening. To put these numbers into perspective, meeting the basic water, healthcare, and education needs of the world's least developed countries would cost us around $80 billion a year. In 2009, the United States of America, has pledged $162 billion to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Yes, there is a paradox here. Humankind is amassing ever greater power, greater wealth, knowledge, and possibilities. Why then is our global society not able to solve these challenges? Well, we socialists and Democrats know deep in our hearts that there is another choice. There is another way. We have viable and better alternatives. We can solve global warming. We can find renewable energy resources. We can make poverty history. We can educate all our citizens. We can give all our citizens access to new technologies, and through them access to our common wealth of knowledge and innovation, access to a new and greener model of development. What is stopping us? Who is in our way? The core paradox is that we have great wealth, yet it is more and more concentrated in the hands of the very few who remain unaccountable. And this is disenfranchising our peoples. The capturing of markets by global oligopolies disempowers our consumers. The concentration of power of global media that all too often limits inquiry, perpetuates myths, misinforms our citizenry, and in the end even stifles freedom of expression. The capture of our democratic institutions, whether it be justice, government, local government, politicians, culture, education, by big business, media, and power, which undermine our democratic institutions. Finally, the capture even of our parties by big business and media, which brings corruption and bad governance. I myself have witnessed this in Greece, where politics is more and more alienated from the real issues and concerns of the people, and caters more and more to the powerful financial and media interests. This is disempowerment of our citizens, and this creates alienation and fear. Our younger generation often sees only two choices, apathy or extremism, inaction or the belief in new messiahs, fundamentalisms, tyrants, or populists. My friends, our adversaries have systematically used fear and disinformation to control the world. That is why we need to consistently use hope and enlightenment to educate and empower our citizens and liberate their potential. Creative potential, productive potential, but even more the potential to create a new culture of collective cooperation and collective problem solving, a culture of solidarity and peace, a political culture of democracy and participation. No, our historical role is not over. It is more necessary than ever. But we must put decision-making within the reach of the individual. And I do not mean one man and one woman, one vote. We have achieved that, and we have seen how that simple tenet of democracy has often been easily abused. I believe the answer lies in the deepening and rethinking of democratic practice, and that we of the socialist family should be at the forefront of this process. This is why the SI must continue to broaden its base, bringing in vital parts of our society, who will challenge us to think differently, to approach problems from a new perspective. Women, youth, minorities, and migrants. They challenge the hierarchical and often bureaucratic way we act. They challenge our vested power and demand that we share it, and we must. They challenge us when we become complacent, part of an establishment, part of an elite. They challenge us when they see the lack of solidarity, meritocracy, or transparency. These groups are often disenfranchised. We must empower them. They are a source of new oxygen for the health of our parties and the Socialist International. This is why we also need to look at new development models. New development and a greener model, one that liberates people from centralized power grids and dependency on fossil fuels. I would like to thank and welcome Jeremy Rifkin, who today will offer us a model of development that deepens democracy as it literally gives power to the people. Let us all listen to him today. Of course, I would like to thank, and we will all listen to the very constructive work both Ricardo Lagos and Göran Persson have begun on our commission for a sustainable world. This is why the SI must continue its work in conflict areas, empowering citizens' diplomacy, a new understanding between Israelis and Palestinians, which opens up the prospects for a secure Israel and a viable Palestinian state. We need to welcome yesterday's decision for prisoner exchange between the Israeli government and Hamas. This is why we need a new understanding which empowers Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots to reunify into one federal state, according to UN resolutions, terminating 35 years of occupation of the island. I believe we need to send a message today of hope and support to both the President of the Republic of Cyprus, Dimitri Christofias, who is meeting with Mr. Talat, the leader of the Turkish Cypriot community in Cyprus these days. Let us hope that the wall that has separated the island for too long will soon be torn down. This is why the Socialist International must continue its work in the Balkans. We have been instrumental in bringing the new democratic pro-European coalition together in Serbia. I welcome the leader of our member party in Serbia, the president of Serbia, Boris Tadic, who is arriving in Athens this afternoon, and his coalition partners, who we welcome as our guests here in the Congress. Let us wish them good luck. This is why we will continue to work for conflict resolution around the world. But this is why we also need to empower the SI by building new alliances. There are parties, governments, and movements around the world that share our common values and goals for peace and sustainability and could become crucial allies or even members of our Socialist International. Democratic progressive forces and friends in India, Brazil, Russia, China, the Arab world, the US of A, and certainly the hope that Barack Obama has brought, hope for a wind of change that makes us hope that his country will play a new positive role for progress and peace in the world. We wish him the best. In this wider alliance, we can learn from each other so that we deal with these new challenges effectively, politically and organizationally. This is why the Socialist International needs to rethink the way we work. We are a huge organization. We have huge potential. We have great knowledge stored in each and every one of our parties and governments and nations. We have new and old, in and out of power. We have the fire of oppositions and the wisdom of governments. We need to disperse this great experience throughout the world. If we are to make a dent on global issues, global institutions, or our national communities, we need to become an organization which can provide practical political solutions for all our member parties and individual citizens. In thanking you for the confidence you have shown me, and also in thanking all who I have been working with, Luis Ayala and all who I have been cooperating with these last 2 years, I must admit I feel that I have more to offer to our organization. In the last 2 years, I have been able to understand the pros and cons of our SI movement in greater detail. I have met with many of you and understand your desire that we move forward. Best practices, training of leaders, new networks of cooperation in dealing with conflict, greater presence, real relevance. These, despite the massive work, and that we have done much work, and there is an important document where you can see all the activities, we have new and pressing priorities for the new leadership of our movement. I propose that the new elected presidium make this a priority. The new presidium needs to discuss all aspects of the future of our movement. We must come up with tangible action plans and necessary changes to deal with these new challenges we are facing in our world. And it is my intention to start immediately the serious and systematic process of linking our activities with these challenges within a tight time framework. I, of course, welcome your thoughts and proposals on these matters. These are priorities which I wish to address in close cooperation with all of you. I plan to visit most areas in order to discuss the necessary new ways we organize our movement. And certainly I plan to include women, migrants, and youth in this discussion. In particular, the younger generation, who is trying to react to the concentration of world power, the hierarchy often of our parties and societies, by networking, creating their own means of communication, innovation, and cooperation. They have much to teach us in new forms of collective action, collective problem solving, collective communication. And I will make it a priority to learn from them. For what they are simply saying is that democracy and social justice is an ongoing struggle. If you abandon it, it is undermined. Democracy, a daily struggle. I knew this as a young boy when my father was imprisoned and my grandfather died under house arrest. I was then in Sweden in exile during the military junta. I thought we would come back to Greece to bury him alone. Yet thousands came, hundreds of thousands came to his funeral. Despite the fear of dictatorship, they came to shout for democracy. Democracy is an ongoing struggle. In tribute to those who have sacrificed so much for democracy and social justice, for the causes of our movement, who have sacrificed even their lives, I would like to finish my intervention by honoring one of our leaders, a leader who has steadily fought for democracy and social justice in her country, Pakistan. We welcome Asif Ali Zardari, husband of a woman who was willing to put her life on the line for her country and for democracy. Let us pay tribute to Benazir Bhutto with a minute of solemn silence in her memory. May we remember her for all her struggles, and may her struggles not have gone in vain. My friends, it is time to write a new chapter in our history. And this new chapter needs to begin now. I thank you very much. I thank you very much for the confidence and the honor you have bestowed upon me. Thank you.